everybody. Hey, we're back with part two, and we're here with Adam Painchow, and we're excited to continue our conversation, and hopefully you heard episode one. If you haven't, go back and listen to us about episode one, but we're going to go ahead and get started right where we left off. So, all right, Adam, so let me get into the next question then. I want to talk about holsters a little bit. You know, we get a question all the time, and we hear people all the time about carrying or, you know, carrying in their pocket without a holster, or you know, how they carry in a pocketbook, or, you know, what's your opinions just in general about holsters and carrying concealed without one? And, you know, what's the most important thing for a holster, like you talked about before? You know, it's all about what's your objective. A pocketbook where you can't get it or something, I mean, you're not achieving your objective. So what's your opinion on holsters and the whole carrying without one and things like that?
Yeah, first off, Brian, I think me and you've talked about before. I'm Adam Painter, and I'd like to let everybody know that I've got a holster problem. You know, it's like a drinking problem. You know, I've got way too
exactly.
many holsters and a ton of them. I think I probably have 50 holsters to every single handgun I own. You know, it's ridiculous. I got bags full of them, but I certainly have a couple of favorites, that's for sure. You know, holsters. You know, I'm always interested to try out new holsters. There's a lot of great manufacturers out there who just make a solid piece of kit, and there's some that, you know, I just haven't found work for me, you know. So there's a lot of them out there, and you know, as far as carrying a holster or not carrying a holster, bottom line is, if you're carrying a handgun, you really need a holster, with a few very, very specific small exceptions to that. You know, you need to have your gun in a holster. Just taking a pistol and, say, putting it in your pocket is just unsafe. And where the problem is with that, if you just, you know, maybe stuffing a gun down your waistband or in your pocket or in a bag or purse or something like that without it being in a holster, the danger is the trigger guard, you know. So, you know, the danger is, you know, the trigger gets activated by something, and it's not protected. So really it's very, very important to have the gun in an actual holster or sleeve, at least, that's going to, at a minimum, protect the trigger guard and any manual safeties. You know, if you got a gun equipped with a manual safety, you want the ideally you want the holster to keep that safety in the on or activated position, and not, you know, have it get bumped and come off safe if that even applies to the, you know, platform you're working with. So certainly, definitely important to have a holster, and the holster really should be specific and form fitted to that gun. And there's just so many different styles, makes, and models out there, whether you're talking open carry or concealment or inside the waistband or, you know, shoulder, ankle, pocket. I mean, there's just a ton of choices out there, and some great, great companies making some nice rigs out there. You know, it's important to do a little bit of research, you know, ask around, you know. Boy, I bet probably, Brian, between the two of us, we've probably got most holsters known to mankind. So, you know, we could probably answer those questions firsthand. You know, so a lot of good gear out there, you know, and I used to tell police officers this a lot of times for their off-duty gun. You know, I see them carrying this just cheap $10, $12, $15 holster. You know, so you got an $800, $900,000 handgun that you're relying on to save your life, and you're using this cheap holster you found online for $15. Well, that's probably not going to get the job done. I mean, maybe you struck gold and, you know, something just worked out, but, you know, you're going to have to drop a little bit of money on a good quality holster. I mean, 50, 60, 80, 90, 100, 150 bucks or so in that ballpark, somewhere in that realm, you should be able to find a decent quality holster, but lots of great ones to choose from. And it's certainly, I think I could talk about holsters for days, just because there's so many different variations and ones I like and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's talk about that more then. You like holsters
sure.
so much. You know, and it's funny because I have the same experience where I'll talk to somebody and like, how could you possibly be putting that in your pocket without a holster? And then they'll say, oh, but I don't chamber one, so it's safe. I'm like, okay, so that's worse.
Yeah, why bother? Yeah.
Exactly. You might as well keep it at home. It's going to be more of a problem for you than a solution. So, but, you know, some people will say, well, because I just, you know, my holster, I just can't get it out fast enough. Well, when I pull it out, my holster stays on it. And I'm like, okay, so obviously, and this is for some of the new people out there to understand it. So obviously you're not setting up your system properly. I mean, I know I've seen people that will have a holster that's made to be worn with a belt, not just slide it in your appendix or something with shorts, but made for a belt. So when they pull it out, the belt's not there to hook the holster. And then they get frustrated and say, well, the holster's the problem. No, it's not. The holster's not the problem. It's how you're using your tools that are a problem. And then the other thing is, what is your, how are you going to achieve your objective if you don't have your tools set up properly and things? So talk about a little bit about that, because for newbies, I see them waste money on holsters. I see them buy the wrong holsters for the wrong type of carry, and then they get frustrated and it's not working for them. And I say this because it's, you know, to really carry concealed in an effective way, there's way more to just what gun you're carrying to what your whole system is like. Can you kind of give us your opinions on that?
Yeah, definitely. And to go back to something real quick about, you know, we're going to go without a holster. I'm not going to lie to you and say I haven't done it. I have certainly done it, probably on several occasions of, you know, just throwing a gun in my waistband or in a pocket. Typically, it, you know, gets thrown in the waistband on the appendix area. I've certainly done that before. It's one of those, hey, I gotta scoot out real quick, or I'm throwing it in there just to conceal it real quick. Certainly not a standard carry method for me, and I don't advocate it. But, you know, like I said, I'm not going to lie and tell you I haven't done it, because I certainly have. There's a lot of gun manufacturers now, you know, when you buy your pistol, you open the box and it comes with a holster. I can list probably four or five companies that do that. Like I said, probably going to be fine for the range, but for everyday concealed carry, something like that, probably not going to work. You're going to need to pick yourself up a good quality holster, you know, and there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for you. You know, most likely you may go through a couple holsters before you find the one that's going to be right for you. And hopefully here at E3 Firearm Association, we can help with that process a little bit, you know, help with some vetted equipment, you know, certainly some holster manufacturers that we know and love, and we know they're putting out great stuff. And, you know, you may have to get a custom holster. I've seen a couple of examples of folks with unique body styles, unique needs, and you may need something that's outside the commercial off the shelf. You may need something a little bit special that are going to for your needs. Like every day, you know, I have my go-to bin, and it's truly a bin. It's a basket of holsters digging out of. And then I've got my reserve holsters and bags throughout the house, basement. But, you know, in that bin of go-to holsters, it's different holsters for different, I'll call it different missions. And, you know, a mission could be going out to dinner with my wife, or a backup piece for my backup gun patrol or SWAT or something like that. So got several different holsters, several different needs. So one holster is just not going to get the job done. So with one particular gun, let's call it my Smith & Wesson little five-shot J-frame, one of my favorite little concealed carry pieces, I've got five or six holsters that I rotate through to use specifically with that gun, depending on how I'm going to carry it and what type of environment I'm going to be in, or more importantly, what type of clothing I'm wearing based on the seasonality and things like that. So a lot of considerations there. So you're probably going to need a few different holsters for any particular carry gun to, you know, kind of get through all four seasons and through, you know, daily life on your routines and things like that.
I have to laugh at myself, because after I've spent over years thousands of dollars on hundreds of $50 holsters and not being satisfied with a lot of them, I finally decided, well, why don't I find a really nice holster I like first and then go buy the gun that fits it? Now, I'm not suggesting everybody do that, but of course, I've been, you know, 20, 30 years carrying, so I was at a point where I'm like, I'm going to try this a little different, went to somebody that builds beautiful custom holsters, like you said, and then I said, okay, now what guns will fit this? So, now, I don't
not
suggest
a bad idea.
That, but now, and I also want to say that I'm not slamming $30 holsters, because it depends on you, your body style, your lifestyle, where you live, because I know that I have my daughter that lives in a different region and carries a certain way. She has some holsters that are perfect for her that are really inexpensive because of her lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's important that you just got to figure out what works for yourself.
Yeah, you hit the nail. I certainly do. Yeah, I certainly don't want to dismiss the cheaper holsters. I've got a couple little pocket holster sleeves, I'll call them, that probably cost $30-$35, and I use them all the time. They're handy, but they're specifically for that gun, so I know they're going to fit there. It's safe and things like that. Definitely need a little bit of variety out there to get through daily life.
So I'm going to get back to a couple member questions. Before we go there, I wanted to ask you a little bit about situational awareness. I mean, I'm a pilot. I fly jets, and I understand situational awareness and things, but I don't know if everybody really understands that in the firearms world, and you actually just talking about tinning or something that came up. that's a perfect example of why you need to understand what situational awareness is all about. Can you just talk about that for a few minutes?
Sure. Yeah, I'm about to actually knock out a little post on that. You know, it just kind of came to mind the other night. Out to dinner to see a show. Yeah, you know, so situational awareness, just generally speaking, from my perspective of, you know, carrying a gun and having that defensive mindset and being prepared and things like that. You know, what I need to throw out there first is this: we're prepared. So, you know, we got the proper permits and credentials. We're carrying our concealment gun and things like that, situational aware. But the reality is, you just can't be on edge 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, you're just gonna wear yourself out. So there are times and places where you need to kind of step it up a little bit. You need to be more situationally aware than you normally would. So out walking around my house, walking around my property, you know, out on the boat, just daily life and routine, you know, you just kind of out there, you're just kind of going through the motions. And then there are times kind of your spiny senses go up, or you're in an unfamiliar environment, or maybe some things are unfolding in front of you that are kind of unsettling or kind of getting you wondering, I wonder what's going on here. It's those type of circumstances that you need to be aware of. You know, I see a lot of folks, you know, writing articles and stuff like that and saying, you know, you can't be on your phone walking around, you know, with your head down your phone and things like that. Well, the phone and that is just part of our daily life now. I don't think we could get through an hour of our day without our phone, our smartphones probably. So that's a reality. But there's a time and a place to have your head in the phone, and there's a time and a place not to. So as you're walking around, especially in unfamiliar environments or populated environments, places where, you know, you're more susceptible to crime, whether we're talking pickpocketing or, you know, armed robbery or anything in between, you need to maintain a level of situational awareness, where meaning you're aware of your surroundings, you're aware of what's around you, you're aware of where your loved ones are, you're aware of where your gun is, you're aware of where your flashlight is, you know, you're aware of where you're parked, you're not lost. You're situationally aware to where you are on the map, meaning if I were to get in a wreck or I get in a situation, I have to get out of there. You know, is there an alternate route I can jump on? So just having that good sense of awareness, when we call it situational awareness, or SA, it's also referred to, SA meaning SA, situational awareness, having that is important. So, you know, I won't get too deep in it because I'm going to do a separate post on it. But, you know, like the other night, you know, just, you know, walking down steps, parking garage in a you know, a town or a city that I don't frequent very often, you know, so walking to the bottom of the steps, and, you know, you got unknown corners. So you're just peeking those corners, you know, just taking corners wide, things like that, before you're stepping out beyond them. You know, you're just aware of what's around you, basically, especially in unfamiliar environments. And I've said unfamiliar environments, you know, a couple times, but don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, bad things happen in common environments. That local store you go to on a, you know, every other day to maybe get a coffee, a newspaper, a gallon of milk or whatever, bad things could happen there. So don't lose sight of the fact of, you know, you're in such a routine that you don't have a level of situational awareness, and you find yourself in a deadly type of situation or facing some type of violent crime in front of you, even if you're not the victim, you're seeing it, you know, so that could really happen anywhere. So you just, you know, you need to be prepared. You can't live so amped up and so on edge that, you know, you're going to give yourself a stroke and a heart attack, but you need to be aware. You need to maintain some level of SA, situational awareness. That's very important.
Yeah, and you just hit it on the head, because I know a lot of people that are trying to educate themselves, especially if they're new, hear about this or at least just watch some videos around this. And then a response I get from a lot of people is, oh boy, this is just overwhelming. I don't want to have to be in a situation myself where that's all I'm thinking about everywhere. And that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is become proficient, educate yourself to the point where it's almost like unconscious competence, so to speak. And an example,
cool.
So, you know, something else, Adam, I like to make a note on is, you know, situational awareness is understanding your surroundings right now, but also, like, as a pilot, it's also being able to anticipate what could happen. And like you said, I'm not thinking about it every single second, every time I'm in a situation, but there are times that I have to amp it up a little bit. If I'm on a jet or flying, or I'm in a boat and I'm going to go out in the ocean today and I turn the corner, I have to, and the ocean's right there and we're in the inlet, I have to now not only understand what my situation is around me right now, but also anticipate what could happen. I could get the ocean and it could be 6-foot seas. Now what am I going to do? Or I could get the ocean, it's going to be beautiful. If I'm flying in a plane and I'm going to fly into New York City area, and I have to just anticipate they could send me to another location. It could be fogged in and I can't land. Then what am I going to do? So again, we're just talking about people. Just understand what situational awareness is. Just educate yourself a little bit, because that's what E3 is all about. Educate yourself to the point where you can be at that next level of proficiency, where we want to get you to be more of a master. And if you educate yourself on that, now you're not in the situation where you always have to constantly be enamored about that topic in your brain. It just doesn't work that way. And it's just that kind of concept that we're talking about of, you said, well, I turn in the corner. Well, what could happen? I could turn the corner, let's find my car's here. But there could be somebody there because I don't know. So that makes sense, Adam? I mean, are we explaining that to the listeners, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what it is. Just awareness of your everyday surroundings, you know, being aware that things may change, different environments, you know, have different different things you need to do. And, you know, sometimes you need to crank it up a little bit on situational awareness, you know, volume scale a little bit. And sometimes you can relax a little bit. You just need to know when to do, what you need to do based on what you get out there and what you think may be unfolding or coming in harm's way or things like that.
Great, great. And I know our E3 Firearms Association PhDs are actually going to do some articles in the magazine about that and some training courses about that, so I'm excited for it. The one other question that keeps coming in, and I relate this to this, once you become a gun owner or you get your license to carry, depending on where you are, it doesn't stop there. It's not just about the gun or owning the gun or having it on you. There's so much more to the responsibility of that. And one of them is that, you know, I talk to a lot of people that will go out, get their firearm, hide it in their house, don't tell their family, don't tell their kids, don't tell their spouse, and they don't communicate. That's one issue. And I guess the point is more, I want to get your opinion on communication plans with your family, like having a communication plan on when an incident happens or when you're in public, how you handle stuff as a family, not just you, the single carrier, so to speak. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm married with two kids. My kids are fairly young right now, so they're not quite in that communication phase for the most part, except for understanding some basic safety aspects. But, you know, certainly me and my wife, you know, we communicate. You know, we've probably a little bit of a unique situation, though, being both retired military and law enforcement type of folks and still actively involved. But, you know, we certainly have there's some nonverbals that we use, and, you know, there's some active communication that we use to plan for events and things like that. I don't want to say, you know, every other week, you know, we're going through our house and we're doing dry rehearsals. Not quite that jacked up, that's for sure. But, you know, we certainly have a plan. We communicate it. We know, you know, what our responsibilities are going to be. You know, if there's a bump in the middle of the night, for instance, if there's, you know, if alarm goes off in the middle of the night, who's doing what, who's getting the kids, who's securing the house, things like that, who's calling 911. So we certainly communicate. You can't keep it a mystery. You know, I think if you just do it and you don't tell anybody, you know, you're taking one step. Yeah. You know, you got the firearm for protection. You loaded it, you secured it, it's ready to go. But if you haven't really communicated a plan with those folks you live with, especially if they're in your house, they live with you, they need to understand, you know, what to do if a situation unfolds that's potentially harmful or violent. You know, they need to know what to do. And out there on the street, you're out there at a restaurant, you're in a car, could be something as simply as a vehicle accident. Do you have a med kit in your car? Are you prepared? Do you have that level of training to deal with traumatic injuries on yourself or on others? Are you equipped for it? Things like that. The plan and communication, you know, kind of go hand in hand. Again, you can't live life and be so jacked up that, you know, you're on edge all the time, but you need to have, it kind of goes back to that situational awareness. You need to be situationally aware, you need to have a plan for most type of events and be equipped for it properly. And if you have those things, the hope is, and it's a big hope, but the hope is things will kind of fall into place. It's kind of like when I teach tactics. The reason tactics aren't complex and advanced and have all kinds of moving parts is because they just wouldn't work in a stressful environment. That's why tactics, in order to work, are fairly simple. So plans and communications and preparedness needs to be fairly simple, because you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, I think they refer to it as Murphy's Law. If something happens, things go sideways real quick. But the hope is, if you've got a basic understanding of plan, of tactics, of communication, of situational awareness, that things kind of fall into place
space a little bit, so you at least survive that type of encounter or whatever the event may be.
Yeah, definitely. And I can tell you from, you know, my experience, and even just communicating with my family, is also just advanced communication on our plans when we're in public. So like you said, being in a restaurant or something, I mean, we talk as a family because I have girls, and basically say, listen, the reason we sit certain places in a restaurant is because I need to be able to see the door, so I want my back behind a wall. Or when we're in a movie theater, we don't sit in the very back row next to the door. We're going to sit in a certain spot. And the reason we have those conversations and we plan as a family is so that we don't get into those conversations when we're out in public, and who knows, in some cases it could end up being a little bit of a heated conversation. So I plan with my family so that they kind of know that ahead of time.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff should eventually start to just fall into place. Like, so you guys got a plan, the family has a plan, but once it's like having a team or a teammate, you know, or a partner in the field, you know, once you guys start to work with each other for a while, things just kind of fall into place, and you don't even have to actually communicate it. It just kind of happens, like you said, you know, like, you know, if I'm, you know, me and my wife are going somewhere, we just know there are certain things we're going to do and certain things we're not going to do. We just know what we're going to do. You know, it's kind of you don't even have to say it. We know what each other are thinking. Like I was teaching executive protection about a week ago to a team, and, you know, we're specifically talking motorcade movements, you know, how to drive tactically in a motorcade type of formation. And once you get good at it, you know, you got a 3-car motorcade, you know, things just start falling in place. You don't have to talk on the radios. You don't have to say, hey, I got something come up on the left. You just know it. You see it. You have that situational awareness, and things just kind of fall into place, and you just do the right thing, and you follow each other's lead, and you read off of your partners and teammates and things like that. Things just happen. So, but in order for that to work, you need that solid plan, that solid communication, and that constant or decent, I should say, situation awareness, or else that's just not going to fall into place.
You know, you talked a little bit about your wife here a minute, so I want to hit a topic. I'm going to put you on the spot, and because I heard a little bit of a rumor, so I want to get the whole story. You know, I heard that you actually met your wife on a shooting range. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, probably a unique meetup story, I'm sure. So, when I was active duty, you know, teaching protective service top operations for Air Force OSI, you know, one of the missions of our agency is protecting high risk individuals, you know, generals and chiefs of staff, and, government officials, things like that. You know, so we had a school for it, a formal school, and I used to teach at that school specifically. I taught the firearms and tactics and tactical driving type of portions. You know, so it was pretty much a male dominated environment for the most part. You know, so you know, it, I don't know. I think it was every, you know, about every month or so, we'd do one of those courses offsite, and, you know, it'd be, you know, but call it, you know, 12 to 18, you know, men, agents, special agents going through that course. And, you know, once in a while we get a few women in there, a couple, 2-3 women, but it was certainly male dominated. So it was one course I remember there was two ladies in this particular course, and one of them kind of caught my eye. And, you know, our first real interaction, there was a social the night before, you know, kind of meet your instructors in the class and things like that. But we really didn't interact. I think we noticed each other, that's for sure. But really our next interaction was on a firing range doing drills, and one drill in particular where we actually, you know, kind of talked for the first time was I'm driving this old hoopty ghetto car on a firing range out in the middle of nowhere in Virginia, and you know, she sits in the passenger seat, and I have her buckle up and press check her M11 pistol, make sure everything's ready to rock. And, you know, that was our first interaction. I think I said some smart ass comment about, hey, how's this for a first date or something like that. I was trying to pour it on pretty heavy. I don't know if it was working or not, but, you know, so our first interaction really together was driving this ghetto hoopty car, you know, hauling ass up and down the range. And, you know, we had pepper poppers set up, you know, these steel falling targets. And the deal is basically I'm going to J turn into the target line. I'm going to reverse out of it. I'm going to drive side by side on it. And all the passenger, the agent has to do is, try their best to, one, stay in the car, and two, shoot out the window, out the side window, and the front window at the targets as they appear nice and safely. Well, so this one particular agent, Christy, we'll call her, you know, we got done, you know, the dust settled on the range. And I'll tell you what, most of those pepper poppers, I think all but one or two of them were down. And I was pretty impressed. So asked her on a date, and I guess the rest is history from there.
That's a great story. And then, of course, you know, you got kids now. So, I mean, let's talk about how did that perspective change your life, and specifically to guns, and how are you going to train your kids? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the first, you know, aha moment, that first, wow, I got to think about what I'm going to do here. Moment for me was my oldest is not very old. He's only four, but it was probably, you know, 2 years ago or so. He had this little toy squirt gun. He's picking it up and he's, you know, running around the house yelling, bang, 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 bang. And I'm just looking at him. I'm thinking, wow, I've never been in this situation before. You know, if this is one of my students, you know, I'm certainly going to do an instant correction here. But this is my 2.5-year-old little boy running around with a squirt gun, pointing at mom and dad. And you know, what do I do here? Do I correct him? Is it okay to do that with a squirt gun? I mean, you know, so that was eye-opening for me. It's like, wow, you know, things have certainly changed, you know, and our lifestyle of just having, you know, loaded firearms around the house, you know, safely, you know, safely, you know, not out in the open, sitting on tables or anything, but loaded firearms, you know, for home defense, things like that, things certainly change, you know. So I had a, you know, we had to buy, you know, little biometric safes and secure guns. So every gun is certainly, you know, secured, and but it's ready, but it's secured outside the reach of the little ones. So it certainly change things, you know. And you know, I'm a big fan of education. You know, that's what I've built my whole life on, and my career is firearms education. So I think I would certainly be remiss if I didn't educate my own kids. And even though they're little guys, you know, 2.5 and 4.5 years old, there's certainly education. You know, they know that they don't touch guns unless mom and dad are around. But on the same token, you know, I'm showing them, especially the older one, you know, showing them, you know, how to hold them, or showing them responsibility. So I'm killing that curiosity. You know, they say curiosity killed the cat. Well, you got to do your best to kill that curiosity so it's not an issue. I'll go back to as I grew up, you know, dad as a police officer and a fire instructor, you know, so, you know, he always had his, you know, he'd come home, take his duty belt off, and, you know, he didn't, you know, back in those days, he didn't secure your gun in a safe, you know, so he had his gun. I never once touched it, you know, and I was never ever intrigued to touch it without him around. I just knew it's, you don't touch dad's gun. That's just, you just don't do that, you know, and I want my kids to certainly think the same, you know, but you need to, and I think why I was able to do that as a kid and why I didn't touch it is because he educated me. He'd take me out shooting. He'd show me how to hold it. He'd show me how to safely load it, unload it, things like that. And he told me, hey, you know, you don't touch these when we're not around. I get it, you know, so you certainly have to have that education with the little ones. It's certainly life-changing, that's for sure.
One thing that we didn't talk about, you know, you're talking about your kids and your wife, Christy, and what we didn't tell everybody here is that Christy is also a master instructor. I mean, she's also a great instructor. Can you talk about that a little? Because I want people to know that not only is she a great instructor that you're going to talk about, but she also has a program in E3FA that is actually going to be talking about kids and moms and just a little bit of a different perspective.
Sure. You know, she cringes if you call her master instructor, that's for sure. She's certainly an instructor, and certainly have a special agent, and, you know, certainly, you know, carried a gun professionally and done a lot of teaching and instructing and things like that. You know, she's the first to tell you she doesn't consider herself a master instructor. You know, that's not been her primary occupation over the years. But, you know, I think she is in the aspect of her skill set, specifically as it relates to training women. You know, she's certainly mastered that art. You know, men and women learn differently, and you know she's really got a skill, a special skill in training folks, you know, men and women, of course, but specifically women, you know, and they're special, different, you know women have different needs than guys when it comes to carrying and shooting and things like that, and she's mastered that art, you know. So she's done a real good job with that, you know. She enjoys doing it just like me, you know, with teaching, you know, when she's out there and, you know, she's working with the ladies or the guys, and they get that light bulb moment, you know, she enjoys that and appreciates that as much as I do. And she's, you know, a great person, a great instructor. And, you know, she takes the same approach to teaching I do, that kind of laid back, you know, approach, you know, and learning takes place.
Great. And everybody should definitely check out her courses for sure. You know, we talked about some intermediate advanced stuff, some basic stuff, but can you kind of go back to advice do you have for folks out there who are interested in getting a gun and seeking training, but either they're too intimidated or they're overwhelmed, there's too much information out there? I mean, what advice do you have for those people?
Well, jump on E3 Farm Association. That'd be my first piece of advice. You know, I'm a little biased, obviously. I think we both are, you know, but, you know, E3 Farm Association is going to be just a wealth of information for you out there for a new shooter, you know, to get started. But, you know, I encourage you to get out there and get some formal education. Take a class, take a hands-on class, you know, in a classroom setting, on a range, you know, obviously do some research ahead of time, maybe get a heads up on it. But take that class. The reality is, You may be a little intimidated and a little nervous about it, and you're thinking you're going into a class or into a firearms class, you know, for the first time, and your perception is probably, you know, folks in there know more than you do, and you know you're going to be behind the power curve. But the reality is everybody's on the same page. You know, teaching for a long time and conducted a whole lot of classes, you know, and done a whole lot of just basic introductory level classes as well. Everybody's on the same page. You know, there may be an initial perception that, you know, other folks in the class may know more than you, but the reality is they don't. They know as little as you do, and they're just a clean slate waiting to absorb information and learn. So get out there and take a class, and make sure it's from a reputable quality institution that's vetted. Do a little bit of research, you know. You know, I don't want to dismiss getting training from, you know, friends and family members who, you know, may have carried a gun or, you know, maybe had some military law enforcement time, but there's a difference between somebody who, you know, carries a gun for a living versus somebody who's a actual instructor in that discipline. There's a big difference, you know, So our folks out there, like myself and others who've, you know, spent careers, you know, teaching the skill of firearms and firearms education and tactics and things like that, you know, we've gotten to a level where we know what works and we know what doesn't work. And so find a good quality school or course and get out there and take some formal lessons. And, you know, in some cases, maybe it's better to, if the institution will allow you to do it, is take a class first before you even buy the gun. You know, you may be looking at a gun and, you know, find out that firearm is just not going to meet your needs. It's not going to fit you properly. You don't shoot it good. You just don't feel you shoot it comfortably. You can't carry it effectively, whatever. So if you can, maybe even try to take a class before you even purchase that gun if you're just barely starting to get into it. And, you know, kind of go back on what I was saying, you know, you may have that, you know, that uncle or aunt or, you know, friend or relative or dad or somebody who, you know, can give you some just basic safety training, but you really need to get out there. You need to get formal firearms education. I really think that's important. Not just from the responsibility standpoint, but think about the legality standpoint. If you find yourself getting in some type of altercation or situation, whether it's at your home or on the street or in your vehicle or something like that, you've got that formal education to back you up. You know, you've been formally trained on, you know, the use of force, specifically the use of deadly force, and, you know, the responsibilities of carrying a firearm and marksmanship and tactics. You know, that goes a whole long way, and it shows a layer of responsibility that a lot of people don't take.
All right, I definitely appreciate that, Adam. And you know, at E3, we really have taken a very different approach, and it's really a practical approach, and we have PhDs on staff, and we really understand what it takes to get the people to be a master. I know there's different people out there, different people have different interests, and I know people that they have their one firearm, and they're not really interested in really educating themselves. That's just the way they are. That's fine. That's okay. That's not what I'm about, but I understand. But then there's everybody else who at least wants to be educated a little more. They want to learn more. They just love the world, the firearms world. They just like everything about it, and they want to continue to educate themselves. And we know that there is a normal learning path for anything. It's just who we are as human beings. And we start in any situation as unconsciously incompetent, which means we don't know what we don't know. And a lot of newbies are kind of in that area. And then we kind of learn a little bit, and we move into this conscious incompetence, and that's like an aha. That's like, oh wow, I really know a lot that I don't know. And that's, you know, that's a little bit of a dangerous place, but still it's better than being unconsciously incompetent. And then as we learn a little more and we train, we get into consciously competent. So now we're pretty competent, but we have to think about it. We still have to practice certain things in a certain way, and we have to think about it. And then we move into being a master, or like at your level, and a lot of people you're surrounded with, which you become unconsciously incompetent. You're going to react even without thinking, and you're going to be effective. So you know, we understand that at E3, and we're actually deploying that in all of our training, which is one major difference in what we are about. And the bottom line is that's going to get massive results for our members in a quicker way and in a more responsible way. So, but in general, I just wanted you to close out with just kind of talking about, you know, in your opinion, what does it really take to be a master? What does it really take to really master this craft that we're in?
Well, you said it, you know, the level of competence we're trying to achieve is that unconscious competence, you know, where things just happen, they fall into place, like you said, you know, where, you know, kind of like I was talking about earlier with situational awareness and planning and communication, where you don't even really need to communicate it anymore. And just your tactics is your plan. So I don't necessarily have a plan for everything, but my tactics, my base of knowledge is my plan, and I can make that work in any type of environment, you know. And I kind of think, you know, related to firearms and tactics and things like that, that's the level of becoming a master, is when you've gotten to that point and things just fall into place and things just work. You know, you have that solid skill set, your hard skills meaning, you know, your firearm skills, you know, your defensive tactics, your actual tactics, things like that, you know, your driving skills, your medical skills, you know, all kind of, you have all that, you have that solid base, and you've trained for enough situations that pretty much any situation you're going to run into, you've almost seen it before. You know, I've been here, I understand what's unfolding in front of me, and I can adapt and relate to this and deal with this and defeat this objective, whatever it may be, you know. Specifically with firearm skills, being a master, you know, there's certainly a whole lot of repetition there. You know, you certainly have to have done it a whole lot of times. And I've seen different folks master that trade at different times and different levels. You know, I've recruited instructors over the years, and I've recruited them at the, you know, maybe they came out of, you know, Army Special Forces or federal agency or law enforcement or SWAT or something like that. You know, they certainly had that level of competence from the operator or the user standpoint, but from the instructor standpoint, they didn't. And, you know, I've seen folks like that, you know, that have achieved that master level status in a fairly short amount of time. I've seen it, you know, as short as, you know, a couple years, and I've seen it take as long as, you know, lots of years. And the reality is some folks just won't get to that standpoint. You know, I've seen instructors and worked with people who, as much as they tried, they just may not ever achieve that level to be a master with that specific discipline. And that's okay. You know, not everybody has that ability or has that skill or will achieve that level. It's certainly, you know, unique, and it takes a lot of work to get into it. And everybody achieves it and will get there at a different pace and a different level. And everybody's got different styles of learning and things like that. But the level you're optimally trying to achieve is that level of I can do things without even having to put too much thought into it. Kind of like the theory of, you know, once you learn how to ride a bike, you always know how to ride a bike. Well, once you learn how to master something like, let's call it a reload with your pistol, you know, doing a slide lock emergency reload with your pistol, you know, once you've mastered that, well, you got it, you know, you got it, and it just kind of happens. And I'm not saying you don't have to practice it, you know, you certainly still have to stay up on your skills, but you got it. You're going to be able to do that whether it's dark, whether you're doing it with one hand, while you're doing it with one hand, while you're on the move in the dark and the gun's slippery. I mean, you know, so whatever factor you may throw in there to the equation, you're going to get through it because you've been there before. You've mastered that particular discipline. So that's kind of what it means for me. And, you know, I'll go back and say it again, you know, not everybody will get to that level as hard as you may try. You know, I've seen students, you know, at schools and institutions that I've worked with, you know, and, you know, they take the same course over and over again. They're, you know, they're students of the gun, constantly learning. They just don't get that level. You know, some people have it and some people don't. Let me also tell you this, and I think this is extremely important. You know, as an instructor, and I think a fairly decent instructor myself, you know, I'm still a student, you know, so I'm still a student of the gun. You know, I haven't gotten that point where I know it all, that's for sure. And if I ever get to that point, Brian, I'm going to stop. I'm going to find something else to do. Maybe I'll go work on trucks for a living or build stuff or just get on my boat and go somewhere. Who knows? But, you know, if I ever get to the point where, okay, I've had enough and I know it all, then it's in the bank, then, you know, I'm going to do something new. So I am forever a student, forever trying to go to new courses, learn new things, read an article, you know, taking advice from my fellow instructors out there and picking up new little things, you know, and I think that's part of being a master. Part of being a master is you're always picking up new things, and your ideas, your thoughts, your tactics, everything stays fresh and you change things. You know, you're not so stuck in your ways that, you know, you're not going to change things up, that you're open to discussion and open to the fact that threats change and technology changes, you know, that may drive, you know, the way you do things. So, you know, you're always staying up on your skills. You're mastering that discipline and staying up with it.
Yeah, and the key is make the commitment and start down the path. I mean, you got to start. Mm-hmm. That's 99% of it. So
yep.
Appreciate all your time today, Adam. I know that everybody's going to really enjoy all this information and get to know you more. And before Adam says goodbye, everybody, I just want to say, if you like this information, please, you know, share E3 Firearms Association with your friends, your family. I mean, we have a great staff here. We have a lot of great vetted instructors. And, you know, we promise to do our best to get the results that you're looking for, no matter what level you are. And again, you know, we're about where you are right now, whether you're a beginner or, you know, you're really starting to get into being a qualified operator. I mean, we're here to be able to do that. So we're dedicated to helping you create results. So please share it with friends. And Adam, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it. And I'll let you close it out and say goodbye.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. And, you know, yeah, I was totally psyched about E3 Firearms Association. You're going to be hearing from some just industry professionals, myself and others out there. You know, I've been very fortunate to, you know, meet a lot of people and work with a lot of people in the industry who are just top levels at their profession. And we're going to be tapping them as resources for information. So you're just going to get some quality, solid information. And we're excited to get you to be part of our community, part of E3 Firearms Association. So we'll see you out there.
All right. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.